there's a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast, the show for Monday, March 7th, 2011. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and if you're wondering why I sound so terrible, that's because I am once again coming to you from my 2003 Toyota Echo on Interstate 75 near Macon, Georgia. And this time, I'm joined by generic podcast co-host, the co-host, Mr. Greg Luca.
Hey guys, how's it going? Just talk about Adam's car real quick. It's awesome. Don't let him hate on it, because I'm sure he'll try to.
I'm going to. Greg himself hated on it earlier in this trip.
Well, the steering wheel is kind of, you kind of have to wrestle it if you want to actually turn the car. Other than that, it's great, though.
Right. Greg is driving right now to ensure our safety as I produce this podcast. We are on our way back from Nashville, Tennessee. We just covered the Florida Vanderbilt game, the Gators' last regular season game of the 2010-2011 season. They're heading to the SEC tournament in Atlanta this coming weekend. Greg, just give sort of your overall thoughts and impressions on the game. The Gators won, got their third outright SEC regular season championship in school history. Big game, big win. What'd you think?
Yep, 86-76 win for the Gators. To me, the key was the balanced scoring. They had all five starters score between 13 and 17 points, and they all took between 9 and 11 shots. So they really spread the ball around in the offense and were able to put up the 86-point number that way.
I think the bigger thing is not necessarily this balanced scoring, and you pointed this out very well, is the balanced shooting. We've talked about that a lot on this podcast, like Irving Walker, Kenny Boynton, and Alex Tyus, it seems like, take the lion's share of the shots. So when you have Parsons, Macklin, and Tyus, and Walker and Boynton all taking 9 to 11 shots, that's probably when the team is at its best.
Yeah, the balance is definitely impressive, but at the same time, it's not always the best that they're exactly even. Mm. Like, balance can be good, but at the same time, you would still think that people like Macklin and Parsons should be above average,
right?
Not everybody exactly average, but this is a step in the right direction.
Right, and what created that? What caused that to be more balanced this game than in the past? Because you'd think, you know, if they can do it this time, just do it every time.
One thing Billy Donovan said after the game was that they tried to work away from Jeffrey Taylor, a sophomore guard on Vanderbilt. Apparently he's the team's best defender and was kind of locking down whoever they put him on, and they moved him around. So then the offense just kind of took turns working against people who had better matchups, softer matchups, easier guys to work against. And like Vanderbilt coach Kevin Stallings said, Gators basically just took turns on offense.
Right. And obviously this was going to be a big game coming in. We knew that Memorial Gym's a tough place to play, although it's not quite as, you know, weird as it was all cracked up to be. I'm sure this is your first time there.
It's a little different, the hanging baskets, the raised court. There's some things that are awkward about it, but it's still a basketball court. It's still made out of wood. There's still hoops.
Right.
You still play basketball, so right. I think it's doable.
They don't change the rules of the game when you walk in there. The baseline benches are weird.
That would be interesting if they did, though.
That would be a whole lot more of a road challenge, I guess you could say. But still, they knew it was a big game going in because they knew that if Alabama won early in the day against Georgia, which it did, Florida would be playing for the outright SEC championship. That was sort of weighing on the players' minds. Some of them said they... Did anybody say they didn't know?
Irv actually said he hadn't heard about it. He just said he had no idea because he was just going to go out and play his game no matter what. You know, that whole cliched thing.
Do you believe that?
It's tough to say because everybody else was honest about it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he would take it on himself to lie to us for no reason.
Uh-huh.
So in that case, I tend to believe that maybe he didn't know. Maybe he doesn't care. But
right. But the thing is that Chandler knew when we talked to him. And I'm pretty sure the other guys said they knew, right?
The funniest part to me was that Billy Donovan was like, yeah, of course everybody knew about
right.
it.
Yeah, and this came after we talked to Irv.
Right.
And Irv was like, to be honest with you, I didn't know. I was like, come on, you were in a locker room and a locker room full of players and coaches who knew that Alabama had won, and yet you managed to stay on an island of no information and not find out about the fact that you had to win this game to win the SEC outright.
I mean, earmuffs, man.
Yeah, well, we've heard them listening to the headphones coming into practice.
Right.
They listen to some loud music on those things.
Yeah, he missed his phone that day, so, I mean, he could miss anything.
Right. They're certainly not listening to the podcast, because I'm sure this podcast audio quality would not be... You can't even get that loud with the way this podcast is.
Highly doubt it, and if you did, you'd probably not.
That's true. All right, but going back to the game, it's very important. They knew that. They knew the pressure going in, and this team has sort of failed to capitalize on success in the past, and they obviously had some recent success beating Alabama on senior night. Billy Donovan perhaps mistakenly called it a Cinderella story. I think he probably just meant to say fairy tale.
Yeah, Cinderella doesn't really apply, but whatever.
Right. So coming off sort of a fairy tale win, a very happy end, you know, senior night, winning the O'Dome, a win over the team that they were most directly competing for to at least clinch a share of the SEC championship. And then they come out and they actually look motivated. They look ready to play, and they put together a pretty impressive win.
Well, we always talk about trying to handle success, and then in the games where that's been a problem, you look at like Jacksonville, UCF, Mississippi State, those kind of games where they actually ended up losing. Those ones where they struggled to handle success, there really was nothing on the line. Now with the SEC tournament and NCAA tournament, and then this game was for the outright title, and then everything up to this point has been to stay in contention for that. There always is something to play for. Like, it's like the problem that Billy Donovan keeps talking about is, how do they get excited to play when they have nothing that's on the line? Well, the rest of the season, there's definitely something on the line for them.
Right, so how do they get excited to play when there's nothing on the line? Well, they just have something on the line. I don't know.
Yeah, like, it's not going to be an issue anymore, I would think.
Do you think then this team comes out motivated for the SEC tournament after kind of the emotional high of this? And the fact that the tournament seeds are, you know, more or less going to be locked up in a 3-4?
Right, it depends if they... I don't know how they view the SEC tournament championship compared to the SEC regular season championship. Mm. But I imagine they'd kind of want to win the SEC tournament. Like, just wild guess that might be something a basketball team's interested in doing. So I don't think it could. I don't think it's likely to be a thing where they're like, oh, we got the regular season, whatever.
Right.
But there's a chance, I guess.
Okay. Because that's my thing, is that last year the team didn't really come out motivated, and they needed to be motivated then, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how I see that playing out, but once Florida gets the first round bye, they lock up the first seed in the East. They're going to get first round bye and then play the winner of Arkansas, Tennessee, I believe.
That could be right. I haven't checked it. The field should be set by now, but I don't know exactly. Well,
fortunately, I have an iPhone. Thanks, Apple, and I can check the other. They face the winner of East 5 seed Tennessee and West 4 seed Arkansas on Friday night at 7:30 p.m.
Okay, well, Arkansas would definitely be the easier matchup there.
Yeah, obviously.
Either way, it should be. It's not going to be a walkover.
Right.
I think in the weeks, in the podcast leading up to this one, when we kind of broke down the tournament, we kind of just figured, like, they'll have a first-round bye. They'll end up playing somebody terrible. This isn't going to be exactly a complete walkover opponent, it seems like.
But, yeah, with Tennessee, obviously, it would be a pretty difficult match. I don't think they'd have any trouble with Arkansas. At this point, honestly, I have a difficult time saying they'd have a lot of trouble with anybody in the SEC other than Kentucky.
Kentucky, definitely. I don't know about have any trouble with, but
really,
teams that would actually threaten to beat them to me would, yeah, Kentucky would be the list of one, most likely.
Right, because, I mean, with what they did to Vanderbilt there, I mean, in Memorial Gym.
In their building, yeah.
And Vanderbilt had a sellout crowd, had a lot of momentum going at a lot of different times. I mean, my God, when Brad Tinsley absolutely embarrassed Chandler Parsons.
Yeah. He'll never recover from that.
I mean, he seemed to recover pretty quickly.
No, never going to recover.
Never? You mean he didn't recover when he went back down the court laughing?
He's going to be real happy, but there's always that scar. It doesn't heal.
Okay. All right, I can see that. What was your reaction when that play happened, by the way? I had to cover my mouth. I was sitting right next to you. I was going crazy.
I was just shocked, and I just looked at you, and then I just looked down. It was just, I just couldn't believe it. We had the ESPN monitor right above us, so I had to take a quick check of that.
Right.
Make sure I actually saw what I thought I saw. And, yeah, he got dunked on.
Yeah, there you go. Moving on to other specific players, what we saw out of them Saturday night's game. Kenny Boynton really impressed you. He's been shooting the ball extremely well. I think Kyle Maestri's friend of the podcast, GatorBait.net reporter, posted on Twitter during the game that Kenny had made like 14 of his last 29 threes or something dating back to the Georgia game. He's been on a pretty impressive hot streak as of late.
Yeah, he actually said in media last week that before the Georgia game, just one of the practices the team had, it just started to click for him, just started shooting better out of nowhere, it felt like, and that he's carried that hot streak through to now. He's been averaging a lot more points, assists, and rebounds, actually, over the last four games than he had up to this point in the season.
It seems like he's just sort of getting everything together. And obviously, he's a guy who you want to have peaking at the right time
right
into the tournament. If you can get him just shooting well enough, you know, to not hurt you, Parsons doing what he's doing right now. And Alex Tyus even had a nice game Saturday. Had the team's only double-double, 13 points and 10 rebounds, although that 7 offensive rebounds number may be a little suspect.
Yeah, I've always felt like with this team, if they all played up to their potential and their talent level, that they could be as good as people thought they could be in the preseason, and they could be a Final Four team or something in that range. But it's just so rare for all of them to be clicking at the right time, but at least from their perspective, it's nice to see that at least Kenny Boynton is right now, and maybe you can carry that through the SEC and NCAA tournaments.
One player who's been a little off, at least shooting the ball lately, though, is Irv, which is kind of unusual because he's always... he's been their most consistent shooter, I guess you could say.
I would say that. He was, like, earlier in the season, Parsons was on and off. Right. Kenny was always on and off. But Irv seemed to be the one true outside threat, it seemed like.
Right. But then all of a sudden, he's not shooting the ball well. But he is playing well. I think he's defending pretty decently. He's making his free throws. He's getting in the lane, causing a little bit of trouble. I don't think he's a problem right now, but I could see teams potentially exploiting the fact that he's having trouble shooting.
Yeah, at the end of the game when Vanderbilt was trying to make their comeback and they're pressing and they're fouling, it's Irv who's handling the ball and he's getting it up the floor and he's beating the 10-second call and he's getting fouled and he's making the free throws. So he's still doing the things that he needs to do for them to be a good team.
Another thing that they were criticized for, talking about outside shooting, another thing they were criticized for earlier in the year that has completely come back and not been a problem at all, free throw shooting. What were they, 17 of 20?
Yeah, Kenny Boynton and Irv look like just 100% half the time they're there. Like, it's pretty impressive what they're doing. Parsons has been better, but it's hard to be worse than airballing.
This is true, at home, yeah.
Macklin is still Macklin, but it seems like they've been trying to find situations where they cannot have him shoot any critical free throws.
They just put Patrick Young in the game.
Yeah, they've found ways to work around their struggles in some cases and apparently fix it in others.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, all the flaws that were called out about this team earlier in the year, you know, like they have trouble handling adversity. They've clearly been able to do that. They have trouble handling success. They've been able to do that just now. They can't shoot free throws. They're doing that. They can't shoot from the outside. Parsons, Boynton, and Walker are shooting probably, I mean, Parsons and Boynton are probably shooting as well as they have all year. And Walker, you know he can shoot. And if he finds that, they're as good as they can get.
Right. You and I talked about this a little bit last night. We just feel like they're a really complete team.
Yeah.
They have all the pieces you look for in a college basketball team, at least.
Right, which has led some people to compare them. And then between that, the 13 wins in conference play, the SEC regular season championship, some people, mostly some writers, desperately want to draw comparisons between this team and the 2006-2007 championship team, which was the second of the back-to-backs, one of the best college basketball teams I've ever seen in person, or just ever seen at all, honestly. I think that was like the definition of a complete team. Those were a group of players who perfectly complemented each other. And, you know, they were also extremely talented. It's not like this group that perfectly complements each other, but they're kind of, we've called them the poor man's version of the 04s, and I think that's certainly true.
Right.
And who was it? Kevin Stallings just wasn't having that comparison after the game.
Kevin Stallings was right on with this because it makes a lot of sense to say, hey, look, the scoring is balanced. And I wrote earlier in the year, just compared that this team had a lot of players. At that point, they were averaging all between like 9 and 13 or something like that. And then it's well known, the 04s, their national championship seasons, everybody averaged between 11 and 13 points. So that's kind of the range that it's common with Billy Donovan teams, and good Billy Donovan teams especially.
Right.
But like Stallings said, it's just not the same talent level. Like, the 04s had three guys go in the NBA draft lottery.
Yeah.
This team will be lucky if three players off this team get drafted. And actually, I don't think... Maybe Boynton, Young,
Parsons.
And Parsons can all get drafted.
You don't think Macklin has any chance to get drafted?
Not on those 90-year-old knees.
All right.
With the one move and the no rebounding.
Right. All right. I don't know, man. Young, who'd you say? Boynton?
Boynton, Young, and Parsons.
All right.
Obviously, if you're going to rank them by most likely, it would be Parsons, Young, and Boynton. But
right.
I just threw Kenny out there first because I'm thinking of that third maybe.
Right. God, remember when Kenny Boynton was a one-and-done?
Right.
Yeah, it's good times. It's rough. Anyway, talking about them being a complete team, though, and not quite being that good, Donovan still says and sticks to that line that this is the most rewarding team he's ever coached. And I think he has plenty of reason to do that because of the whole process of getting them here, which he's talked about at length, and especially leading up to senior day. He's talked about that, how he's turned, you know, how these guys have come so far, and they came in expecting championships. You know, they just thought it was their birthright, they were going to win championships no matter what. They didn't know what it took to win them. And it seems like now, you know, through all the problems they've had, and I think if you were to list all the problems Florida basketball has had the last 4 years, you would literally have every possible problem with a basketball team.
I mean, you'd come pretty close, and like, when you look at all that, and then the thing we were just talking about with how the former national championship teams were so much more talented,
right.
It makes sense that this would be more rewarding because so much more had to go in on his end.
Right.
I'm not saying that he didn't do a good job with the 04s, but there's a lot of coaches out there who could have taken the most talented team and won a title.
Right. The one thing he did extremely well, which is kind of ironic that this team struggled with this early on, is that he had them handling success incredibly well and had them handling pressure incredibly well back in 06, 07.
Yeah,
because you think there is no greater pressure than having to defend a title, you know, and they did that masterfully.
Right, the way he said it when he was asked about it early in the season and in the preseason was that the two championship runs were completely different. Because the first year, the first championship, nobody saw that coming. They weren't anybody's pick. Nobody really expected them to make a run all the way to the Final Four and win it. And then the second time around, everybody expected them to make a run all the way to the Final Four and win it.
Right.
So that's just a totally different dynamic for him and the team to have to deal with.
Yeah. And fittingly, since we're calling this year's team the poor man's 04s, it's kind of been similar to that this year. Like last year, all they wanted to do was just make it back into the tournament. That was their talk from the beginning of the season, you know? Like, oh, you know, we want to get back in the tournament. There was no talk of, like, we want to get in the tournament and make a deep run. Because, you know, they couldn't do that. You know, they didn't have that in them.
They didn't have the experience. They didn't have the talent, maybe.
Dan Warner played on so many meaningful minutes for that team.
Right. That's never a good sign.
Right. So I'm saying, like, the expectations were different. And this year they have had to deal with a little bit, you know, the high preseason ranking. The fact that they've known for a long time they were going to be in the tournament. It's just they've had to deal with the pressure and the expectations of what can they do with that. And I think that's why it's probably been a little bit similar, just, again, on an extremely micro level compared to, you know, the whole concept of defending a national championship.
Right, and this year they definitely are looking to make a deeper run, and they just aren't looking to just get back. So the expectations are higher both outside and for them on a personal level and as a team level. So that it is much more expected of them from every perspective this season. And so far they've shown that they're capable of being better than they were last year.
Right. Do you think that's what Donovan's talking about when he always talks about, you know, setting goals and looking forward and not being satisfied with certain, not getting complacent? Do you think that's what he's talking about?
I feel like he understands that they want more, and I think, like, they understand that he expects more and that the players expect more of themselves.
Right.
Because they don't, I mean, the reasons we're here talking about how if everybody plays to their level, they can do well, and they're a complete team and they have all the pieces. Like, we're not the only ones that know this. I think the players understand they have a pretty good team, too.
Right.
So they know that they're capable of good things if they can put it all together. And that's inspiration enough to say we need to work hard and we need to be able to go out and capitalize on our potential.
Right. All right, before we move on to the SEC tournament sort of preview stuff, I just want to say, because this is a conversation we've had both when we were recording video and then before we were recording this, is like, and even a little bit when we were writing, it's like, you know, Florida won an SEC regular season championship, and it's not, you know, you try to focus all your stuff around that, and Florida's night was certainly focused on that. If you heard Chandler coming out of the coming off the court and screaming some very excited things at an SID and going into the locker room and screaming "Yes, sir," and just the whole team was very excited, hugging, chest bumping, whatever.
Lots of things we can't and won't repeat.
Yeah, mostly on a family-friendly podcast such as this, but I feel like it's hard to give that the due attention, you know. It's like, we're gonna write that they won, we're gonna talk about how they won, but how do you really, you know, how do you break down the fact that they won a regular season SEC championship, and how much does it mean?
Here's what I think. It's like, they won 13 games in the SEC. If you go back to preseason, it was like, I don't know, do you guys think they can finally win 10 this year?
Right.
Like, I don't, 10's a lot.
Right.
Like, when's the last time they won 10? Like,
wow.
You know? But this is 13. That's so many.
Right. It's as many as they won in 2006, 2007.
Right. It's a very impressive accomplishment from that perspective. And maybe you think the SEC is down, but the East teams are certainly the best of the bunch. They did not play an easy SEC schedule. If you think they have to play three teams from the West. They played the top two seeds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on the road.
Right. I don't know. That's the thing, is that I think it's a little devalued because the SEC is not viewed as that. I don't know. It's not viewed as a particularly tough division right now. I don't know. I feel like it means a lot just from the team's perspective, but I have a hard time personally, just like from a journalist perspective, of getting really excited about the fact that the team is a regular season SEC champion.
Right. But I feel like when you look back at history and they have the year by year record, the 13 is going to stand out. You know, it's worth noting that, hey, this was 13. That's a big number.
That's actually where I was about to go, is I think this is something that might be more impressive historically than it is in the moment. You know, like, you're going to look back and you're going to be like, all right, well, Florida, you know, 8-8, 9-7, 9-7, 13-3, you know, like that, regular season SEC champion. This is the fifth time they've done it ever four times have come under Billy Donovan, third time they've ever been outright regular season SEC champions. You know, like, that's that is an impressive accomplishment. I feel like it's hard to give it its due credit while the year is still going, you know?
And I feel like something that hurt was, something we talked about before, from the media's perspective, it was, this team can't handle success. It's only a matter of time before they blow whatever winning streak they're on.
That's true.
So they're not going to get to 13. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, they'll lose some softy to, you know, to South Carolina or to Mississippi State. But at the end of the day, they only lost 3 SEC games.
Right.
So now that they don't have any more chances to blow it, it's kind of time to say, wow, they actually did make it through all the way.
I think that's a little bit, you talked about from the media's perspective, that's kind of, and I wrote about this a little bit, it's always sort of looking toward the next thing, you know, when's the time they're finally going to fall, you know? Whereas I don't think we, or at least I'll admit, have particularly put that into, like, the proper perspective. And I think that's something that, for me at least, will happen once the season ends, you know? If the season ends in the Sweet 16, it'll be, you know, this team was a Sweet 16 team and the regular season SEC champion, then it all becomes just a little bit more impressive.
Right, I guess a lot of it is defined by how they actually close out the season.
True.
But to me, so much of it is, like, when we went back to when you and Kyle projected the rest of the SEC schedule, uh-huh. You guys were kind of doing it like, well, they can win this one, and then they'll be due for a loss, so they'll probably drop that one, and then they'll win this 2 or 3, and then they'll be due for another loss.
Right.
Like, I guess they've always been due for a loss, but it kind of got lost that they never actually did. Yeah. You know? I don't know.
That's a good point. But speaking of where they head next, we've got the SEC men's basketball tournament schedule loaded up on my iPhone. Greg is not looking at it. He's looking at the road very diligently. We're going to go through and sort of go game by game and sort of eventually pick a winner here. Let's start with the top of the bracket. Coming this Thursday, Auburn versus Georgia. Auburn the West 5, Georgia the East 4.
Auburn's terrible next.
All right, Georgia. I'm going to pick Georgia as well there. You got South Carolina, East 6 seed, West 3rd seed, Ole Miss.
This is kind of interesting. Like, two short guards who both try to take over.
Right.
But I'll go with Chris Warren of Ole Miss here.
I like Ole Miss there as well, but I think that's probably the second best first round matchup. The best being Tennessee, the East 5 versus the West 4, Arkansas.
Yeah, I buy that the Tennessee-Arkansas is definitely the biggest one. And that's actually the one, the winner of whom will face UF.
Correct.
But I'll go with Tennessee there. Just, they're both solid teams, but when in doubt, go with the East.
That's a good judgment system. I'll take Tennessee as well. And then the final, I believe it's, the nightcap. West 6 LSU versus East 3 Vanderbilt.
Wow, you saved that showdown for primetime?
Yeah, I know.
And I think we're going to go with Vanderbilt there.
That's a very safe pick. All right, so then we picked the exact same going forward here. All right, so Georgia versus Alabama at second round. West 1 seed Alabama versus East 4 Georgia.
This is probably the best second round game. Being a little spoiler, we looked ahead a little bit. But
yeah.
These are two teams that played yesterday. And after, I think it was Georgia won that? I'm blanking right now. Who won yesterday?
Bama.
Right, Bama won, because
then Florida had to win.
Right, okay.
Yeah. We're very tired.
I'm driving. I'm not thinking about this.
Okay, I'm very tired.
Anyway, that game, after that result, those two teams became the top two of the first four out. So basically the next two teams after they round out the field of 68 for the tournament.
Oh.
So that becomes kind of another play-in for the tournament scenario. Makes it a really intriguing game from that perspective. And, of course, from the SEC tournament perspective.
Right.
I think I would have to go with Georgia there. Again, with the East is better than West system. And
right.
Just how bad Alabama looked against Florida.
Yeah, well, and stepped on. I was going to pick Georgia as well. But go ahead. Yeah, you take it first. I think Georgia's going to have a little bit more to play for. They're sort of playing for the same thing, but I think Georgia's going to be a little bit more hungry. Whereas Alabama's season is already like a little bit of a success. They're the one seed, whatever. I like Georgia coming out of that game. Next one would be Ole Miss, Kentucky.
Kentucky's the more talented team, and it's not close.
Yeah, and it's in the East, and Ole Miss is very much from the West. Next one, Tennessee, Florida.
Interesting game. They played a couple close ones this year. Mm-hmm. Been exciting contests. The way Florida's playing right now, it's hard to pick against them this early, so I'm still sticking with the Gators.
I will agree 100%. And then Vanderbilt, Mississippi State.
This is another interesting one. It's like we talked about when we went through the conference and we were trying to compare it to the other conferences
right.
On an earlier show. We said what the SEC has is this kind of middle tier that starts really early of teams that are pretty even but are all pretty good.
Yeah.
So these are two more in that group.
I think Mississippi State is below that tier to a certain extent, though. You know, I think that's sort of in the third tier of, like, decent, you know, like with Ole Miss
and
South Carolina.
They're borderline. I would take I'll definitely take the East team.
You're going to take Vanderbilt. All right, so then both of us have the top four East seeds in the semifinals.
Well, we're very bold people, what can I say?
Right. We take the best four teams from the conference to make it all the way. You got Georgia, Kentucky. You're going to pick Kentucky, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick Kentucky.
All right. I like Kentucky there as well. Again, Kentucky, for all I know, though, Kentucky could fall apart to an Ole Miss, you know? Just if they come out and they're not ready to play, like, they can out-athlete anybody, but if they come out and they're just not motivated or they're missing shots, they're down on, you know, they're just not focused, and Calipari certainly never seems focused on anything but the NCAA tournament, then Kentucky could very well lose their first game, but I'm just going to play the odds here. I think that talent gets you far.
I have faith on the most talented team to come out and care in an SEC tournament situation with a championship on the line. I don't know, maybe that's dangerous.
It is a little bit, because I really don't think John Calipari cares at all about the SEC tournament.
He's been talking about the NCAAs for a while.
Yeah.
There was a teleconference like 3 weeks ago where he was like, yeah, we don't really care. We're just kind of working on our seed.
Right.
It's just like, he's worried about the NCAA tournament and then the NBA for his guys.
Right.
None of that little stuff.
Exactly. All right, so I'm still gonna pick Kentucky just because, you know, again, playing the odds, I like talent to be
right. If they do win, you don't want to feel stupid about it.
Exactly. Speaking of feel stupid, Florida versus Vanderbilt, little rematch.
Well, let's see. Florida just went on the road to Memorial Gym and won by 10, so it's kind of hard to go the other way now. So I'm sticking with Florida there.
I will agree. So we got Florida, Kentucky in the SEC championship game, a 1 p.m.er on ABC on Sunday afternoon.
Which is fitting, because they're, I think, clearly the two best teams in the SEC. It
right.
makes sense that it would work out this way.
Right. Who you got?
I have Kentucky.
Wow.
It's like you said with the, if they actually care, if they're looking at the NCAA, is that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do decide to play, I think they're the more talented team.
Yeah.
And what we saw in Rupp, just that they match up better across the board with Florida.
Yeah.
And now I know they're 8-0 at home in conference play, and 1-7 on the road.
Oof.
So SEC tournament, obviously a neutral site, but Kentucky fans notoriously travel so well.
Oh God, they travel well.
I think that they'll be able to keep the intensity up there and play like it's a home game.
They travel disgustingly well, first of all, especially for like the SEC tournament last year in Nashville, where I was telling Greg this last night, this place we were eating. Called Rippy's, a barbecue place. There's a patio upstairs that was open air. It was blue last year. The whole place was just packed with Kentucky fans.
Wait.
So I think they do travel well. But again, I don't think Kentucky's necessarily going to care, and I don't think that really affects, you know, like a neutral. So I don't know. I don't think that's going to have that big of an effect. It didn't. I don't know.
It's just matchups like Terrence Jones, Alex Tyus.
Right.
I got to take Terrence Jones.
Right.
You know, like Brandon Knight, whoever you want to put on him. I got to take Brandon Knight. Just. Things like that across the board, I just like Kentucky's players better, which makes it hard for me to pick the other team.
Eloy Vargas on Vernon Macklin?
Eloy Vargas on the bench, so I'm not going to worry about that.
All right. Well, I would take Florida. I just think right now, with what they've done this year, I'm not going to pick against them until the NCAA tournament.
Right. I just got done talking about how impressed I am by their season and all that.
Right.
I still have to take the more talented team, or when they do win, I'll feel like an idiot for not going with it in the first place.
All right, a couple other things that have come up here as the SEC season, the regular season winds down, and then the yearly awards. You're looking at SEC Coach of the Year and SEC Player of the Year. We'll even talk SEC Freshman of the Year, since I forgot about that in the show intro. Billy Donovan is certainly a worthy candidate for Coach of the Year. Chandler Parsons seems to have somehow snuck his way into being one of the leading candidates for SEC Player of the Year. And then we'll talk about SEC Freshman of the Year. Needless to say, Florida does not have anybody in contention for that, despite the preseason hype around Patrick Young, which seems kind of funny in retrospect.
Yeah, a little bit off, but you'll get him next time.
Right. Not as SEC Freshman of the Year, he won't. We're going to take sides here. You and I disagree on both of these points. I'm going to say Billy Donovan absolutely deserves SEC Coach of the Year, if only for the fact that it's a lifetime achievement award, you know? Like, he has never won an SEC Coach of the Year, which is criminal. The fact that he didn't in 2000, in 2005, in 2006, you know, like, he should have won it already. And the work he has done with this year's team is more impressive than anything he's ever done with, you know, with any team. So I think he's 100% deserving. Florida is, without question, the best team in the SEC. Absolutely deserves it. I'd give it to Billy Donovan, no questions asked.
Right, and if he wins it, I will not be upset. I won't go out there and riot. It'll be fine by me. Like you said, lifetime achievement, or for this team by itself, completely deserving. But I look at Anthony Grant and what he did at Alabama. maybe people say, well, what happened when Alabama played Florida in the O'Connell Center is a sign that, you know, Billy Donovan's done a better job or he has the better team.
Right.
To me, it's a sign that Anthony Grant did more with less for as long as he did to even get them to a position where that game mattered. Because Alabama is not a very talented team. That's why they were picked fourth in the West in the preseason,
right,
and have since run away with it. Just, and then it was after that game, it was a little bit talked about with the coaches. Donovan said that he would vote for Grant, actually, and just that what happens with the SEC Coach of the Year selection is usually just they look at a team that surprised somebody, a team that came out of nowhere,
right,
and give it to that coach, which is why Billy Donovan's never won it up to this point.
That's correct.
So, like, just to me, that is Anthony Grant in a nutshell. Just nobody thought Alabama would do anything. He turned him into a legitimate contender. Could end up getting them to the NCAA tournament. Just things that nobody would have thought was possible with that team, he made happen.
Right. I mean, and you look at some of the things that have made Alabama good this year, and they kind of scream out as, like, coaching things. Like, they play great defense.
Right. All the defense, all the pressure. When they were in the O'Connell Center, I was a little impressed with how much they switched between the pressure and off and man and zone and a lot of the different things they did to try to make life difficult for Florida. And I haven't seen a lot of their games, but I'd assume that's something they mix in frequently.
Right.
That's all coaching.
Right. All right, so I wouldn't be mad if Grant got it. I would be a little bit offended for Donovan's sake, you know, because I think if there's ever a year to give it to him, and, you know, there have been some before, I point to 05-06 certainly as being deserving of it, then I think this has to be it. So
right.
I'd vote for Donovan. Grant would obviously be a close second, and I wouldn't be upset, or Gators fans probably should be offended if Grant gets it. But
Donovan's done enough to deserve it, but at the end of the day, Florida did what they were expected to do preseason. That gets lost in how the season started and the early struggles. But they were picked number one in the SEC just because they got off to a bad start. They finished below where they were ranked in the preseason poll. I don't know what you want to make of that, because obviously if you're number one, you can't finish better than number one.
Right.
I mean, that's not a perfect way to judge things, but it's something.
The other fun thing, though, about when we say preseason struggles, Florida lost six games this year.
Right.
Six games.
If you lose those six games to good teams, it's an awesome year. But you
had
six bad days against bad teams.
Right. So all of a sudden, you know, they're like, oh, they struggled through, you know. They went through some crap there at the beginning
of the season. Which is great, because they played a difficult schedule.
Yeah, they didn't really play a
bunch of cupcakes.
Right. And they just happened to lose some games to those cupcakes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that brings us to SEC Player of the Year. I'm going to try not to come across as, you know, playing favorites and, you know, picking my boy here. But I think I'm going to go with the MVP argument that the most valuable player on the best team wins it. And I think scoring sometimes is a little overvalued. I would just by default have to give it to Chandler Parsons. I think in terms of what he does, you look at 7.8 rebounds a game, 11.4, and that's on the year. He's been better in SEC play. I'd give it to Parsons. I think he does the most for what is without question the best team, and he's been the leader. It's a little bit of, not a lifetime achievement award, but like a season achievement award, you know, for all the things he's done.
Here's the problem I have with picking Parsons. It's just the scoring.
Right.
I don't question what he does in terms of leadership, rebounding, assists, and running the offense. That I don't question any of that. But I just feel like the SEC Player of the Year needs to score more than 11 points per game. So that's why I would go with either Brandon Knight or Terrence Jones. I mean,
9-7, man.
I know, 9-7, but they're still the two best players, in my opinion. They're clearly the two most talented players. I don't think people would argue that among SEC players. I mean, and
right.
I know it's not like an NBA award, but just for what they've done, for the talent they have, for being freshmen and contributing as much as they have right away, I'm impressed enough that I would give it to one of them over Parsons.
All right, and Rachel George from the Orlando Sentinel made a pretty good point about this when we were sitting in the media room at Vanderbilt. Is like scoring, I think, is a little bit overvalued in the sense that, like, John Jenkins is another guy who's being discussed for it. He's a great scorer, but what else does he do?
Right.
You know?
I mean, you're not going to hear me argue for John Jenkins because for that exact reason.
Right.
But, like, Terrence Jones is grabbing 9 rebounds, getting a block and a half, you know, stuff like that. Brandon Knight up there in assists among SEC point guards, getting some steals, getting a few rebounds. They're contributing in all the ways. And everybody, you know, because Parsons contributes in more ways than anybody else to winning, according to whoever you want to ask who wants to say stuff like that.
Me.
But I feel like those two aren't too shabby either.
All right, but why does the 9-7 thing not bother you? Why is that? Like, if somebody, are we doing the Cy Young argument here? Like, if, you know, if the wins thing, where it's
well,
like if... your wins don't matter. You know, like, it doesn't matter if your team is... I mean, granted, Kentucky was the 2 seed in the East, but still, like, I don't know. I feel like the gap between Florida and Kentucky is enough for me to make the argument for Parsons.
I always look at the most extreme example. If Florida basketball was comprised of me, you, a few of our writers, and LeBron, and we went, like, 9-7 in conference,
right,
LeBron would still be player of the year. Like, he's still the best. Can't take it away from him because we're awful.
Right.
So, I mean, I just, it's an individual award, so I look at it from an individual perspective.
All right, that is a damn convincing argument. Whenever you I'm simple. Whenever you make it about me, I can understand what you're talking about.
Here's one thing I want to say in defense of Parsons.
Yeah.
It's like I look at it with the Heisman.
Yeah.
There's people who feel like if you're a quarterback on a spread team, you don't matter because you throw for this many yards and that's just part of the offense. Well, maybe Parsons can't score more than 13 or 14 points because that's just how Billy Donovan runs his team and that's how
right.
he runs the offense. So maybe it's a little bit unfair to penalize him for that. But, like, Nick Calathis managed to stand out and
yeah.
score a good amount of points for that team.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's completely impossible. But if Parsons wound up winning it, I wouldn't be absolutely outraged. But I think there's better candidates out there.
Okay, worth noting that Calathis obviously did that with a much worse supporting cast. And Calathis was, without a doubt, more talented than Parsons, I think, yeah, as an offensive player.
I'm not going to argue that. I'm sure there's some listeners out there who can't believe that we're saying anything good about Nick Calathis.
Right,
but
still.
We're not going to get too far into that. But yeah, worse supporting cast, better player. But.
All right. And then freshman of the year, it sounds like you kind of have, you'd give it to whichever one of the two doesn't win player of the year.
Yeah, and I don't see how there's other candidates. I might be blanking on somebody, but
no,
they seem to be the clear top two.
No, it's Jones or Knight, and I don't know who I'd give it to, honestly, between the two. You made a pretty convincing argument for Terrence Jones, but I really like Brandon Knight. I like the way he plays, I like the way he defends. I think he's a great passer, a great scorer. I'd probably give it to Brandon Knight.
I think they're both great players, and they both should have bright futures in the NBA, so.
Next year.
Whatever. Yeah, next year. We're not going to waste any time with that.
All right, starting to wind down the show. It's going to be a little bit shorter due to the constraints of my laptop's battery life as it sits here in my hands in the front seat of the Toyota Echo. And also because we are driving and we are trying to get home safely and soundly.
All important things.
All important. We're going to talk about sort of, in this intro to sports journalism segment, sort of the life and grind of being the basketball beat writer here at the Alligator. Obviously, I was the beat writer last year. Greg's the writer this year. Between the two of us so far, and this is probably going to be something that extends to the postseason, we've covered all but one game the last 2 years of Florida basketball, which was the Tennessee game on the road last year, which, go back to those old podcasts if you want to hear me whine and complain about how hard it was to fly in U.S. Airways or whoever it was to get in from Charlotte to Knoxville. But, I mean, the fact that we're driving back, it's, you know, 9 o'clock on a Sunday from Nashville.
Spring break, woo!
Right, as part of our spring break, sort of shows the... Florida basketball is without doubt the most demanding individual beat at the Alligator.
I forgot you said individual. Yeah, it's not even close.
Right, it might be the most demanding beat, period, because of the number of games. But football is the daily grind of media opportunities every day. Practice, you have to deal with all the bull crap they throw up in front of you and all the, you know, there's 65 guys, you always got to know what's happening with all of them and all the coaches and everything.
Right.
There's something to be said about that, but certainly at this time of the year, and in terms of being an individual thing, Florida basketball is probably the toughest thing to cover. And let's talk about sort of the highs and lows. What has been better than you expected and harder than you expected about covering Florida basketball, Greg?
You know, for me, better than I expected has been just actually the actual driving part of it.
Really?
It's not a lot of fun to have to drive 7, 8, 10 hours to some of these places.
13.
But it's doable. I mean, you can survive. I was expecting it to be a lot worse than it really is.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, it is not fun. But you can do it. It's not impossible. In terms of the worst,
yeah.
I don't know, what do you have?
Worse than expected? To me, it was gonna be all the trips and everything. I don't know. I was not like mentally prepared when I started for like, oh, I'm gonna go to South Carolina on a Wednesday night, turn around and cover, you know, go to Tennessee on a Saturday or go to Vanderbilt on a Saturday. I don't know. I was not ready for how much upkeep, you know.
Right. It's bad from the perspective of how much time it takes away from the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Like there was a. If quick rant. There was a. I once got an assignment on a Wednesday in class. Had to be done in the library, which is open from 8 to 5 or whatever, okay. By next Wednesday. Well, Thursday and Friday I was in Auburn, and Monday and Tuesday I was in Georgia. So it kind of cuts into other things you might be trying to do on campus to, you know, actually be a student too.
Right, yeah. We forget about sort of the student journalist part sometimes, you know. The journalist part sort of kicks the student thing to the side. I'd say the best thing to me about covering Florida basketball, honestly, is Billy Donovan.
Yeah, I love Billy's great. Billy has a lot of very helpful life advice.
Yeah.
And he's helpful with basketball stories too, you know? I mean, he's always got something to say about everything.
Right. He's always very willing to talk. He's very easy to talk. He's honest too, you know? Like a lot of times we crap on coaches, especially with the football program, for throwing up the smoke screen and, you know, diverting attention to things that aren't there. Billy's pretty much always going to admit when his team has a problem.
Or even simpler things, like if somebody is hurt and you ask Billy Donovan how that injury is going, he will tell you how long he expects the guy to be out, how the process is coming along.
Right.
Probably more information than you even need, but you will get all of it.
To the point where sometimes he will say so much information that it might contradict itself.
Right. Probably, maybe, I think that this might be how this is going.
Yeah. Donovan has a very particular way of talking, but he's been a pleasure to cover, I know. And he's a guy that you're... It's easy to be happy for while still staying unbiased in the sense that, like, he makes our job easier. So I like that his job is going well, you know?
Right, that makes sense. One thing that I really liked is that when you're on the road, there's so much less of a frenzy around being able to talk to the players after the game. Just because when we're at the O'Connell Center, and they unleash us into this little hallway where they trot the players out to post-game, there might be 4 players out there. And maybe 15 people around each one for some of the huger games, like some of the Kentuckys or the Tennessees.
Right.
And then when Florida's on the road, maybe myself, Kevin Brockway of the Gainesville Sun, Franz Beard from 24/7 might show up, and maybe an AP guy or one or two local people from whoever that team is who care.
Right.
So it's a completely different atmosphere to have only 6 guys trying to get some questions in. It usually goes a lot better post-game.
Yeah, you get sort of that small beat experience we're talking about where it's like you can have a one-on-one with the players, which is really good because, as we've talked about before on the show, like the Florida basketball players, at least this team, are a really likable group, you know?
Right. There's nobody who I'm like, wow, I really do not like you and I regret that I have to speak to you for this story I'm trying to do.
Right.
They all seem like a very friendly, a very nice bunch.
All right, so what has been your favorite and least favorite trip of the season?
This is really easy. Favorite is Kentucky. Rupp is storied. Rupp is awesome. Yeah. Loud, fun environment, tons of fans, more than you'll get at any other building.
True.
And least favorite, also very easy, is Mississippi. Because it's the state of Mississippi.
Mississippi State, right?
Yeah, Mississippi State. Sorry. I meant actually driving to Mississippi.
Okay.
It was not necessarily as fun as some of these other trips. Just because there's not a whole lot going on in Mississippi, believe it or not. I know that might be a shock to some of you out there.
Right. You know where there was even less going on?
Arkansas? Yeah.
Absolutely. That was the worst trip from last season for me. And the best, as much as I love Nashville, and, you know, I think that I always enjoy coming here, and I had a great time at the... I had a great time this time. I had a great time in the SEC tournament last year in Nashville, but to me, the trip that I forget I had that was really fun is Atlantic City for that tournament last year.
That would be something special because not even a lot of Florida, not many Florida basketball beat writers get to go up there. It's something different. It's a tournament scenario where you're there for a couple of days, you kind of get to know it.
Right.
The only multi-night stay I had was I spent 2 nights in Cincinnati just because it's so far away.
Yeah.
And you really have, there's time in there to get a feel for the city and a feel for the place more than just the game, and then you're on your way out again.
Right, something you will be able to do in Atlanta for the SEC tournament, though.
Yeah, that should be fun.
All right, and then to wrap up this little segment here talking about being a Florida basketball beat writer, I want to ask you, because obviously I have my perspective, why did you want to cover every game? You've succeeded thus far where I failed, but I want to know what your motivation was and explain to sort of the listeners why that would matter so much.
To me, I feel like it would be so difficult to write a story without actually being there and seeing it. But, okay, it's on TV. You can see it elsewhere. But it's impossible to actually talk to the players, have an interview, get a feel for how they think the game went and what they think were the important factors when you're not actually in the building.
Right.
So it would be, I don't know how I could have covered a game that I wasn't at. And obviously we always need the coverage. So it was more strange to me the idea of not going to every game than the idea of actually going to every game.
All right. To me, it was more about the idea of, like, can I call myself the beat writer and fully knowledgeable about this team if I haven't spoken to them at every available opportunity.
Right, that's another very good point.
Because it's like, you know, then it's like, how am I telling the story of the whole season, and how can I cover this team as capably as possible if I'm intentionally skipping out on on certain things?
If my coverage, if my experience of the game as a writer is the same as the fans' experience, that's probably not a very good sign.
Right. All right, so let's move on then, wrap up this show, since we got about 8 minutes left on the Mac laptop battery with our weekly awards, our Major Right Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport, and Juan DiPierre-Louis Bad Angles of the Week. Since there's only two of us, we're going to do two sets of them, one based on the Florida Vanderbilt game and another based on the greater experience of the trip, which unfortunately we haven't had as much time as desired to talk about. So let's start off with the Florida Vanderbilt majors and Wandies, and Greg, give your major.
All right, my major is pretty easy. The one thing that I'm going to remember from this game the longest is Brad Tinsley just dunking on Chandler Parsons, which was, the dunk itself was impressive. The way Chandler fell and slid across the floor was impressive. It was the number one play on SportsCenter.
Right.
The thing that did it for me was that I had a very hard time thinking of players that I thought were least likely to dunk on Chandler Parsons. He would be very high on that list.
It was him or Rodney Clark from Arkansas, I think we agreed on.
Right, like, just even out of everybody in that lineup, like, this is the white point guard. Like, yeah. He's gonna like rise up and just throw down on Chandler. I don't think he was expecting it either.
It didn't look like it, man. That was disgusting.
Right.
I'm gonna give my major also, ironically, to a Vanderbilt thing. I'm gonna give it to the Vanderbilt fans. Filling up Memorial Gym, sellout crowd, really came out and supported. It was senior night, but the team didn't actually have seniors, just walk-ons, but they still showed up. I love Nashville. I love Vanderbilt. I love the fans. I love the people. I gotta give it to them for fulfilling that, filling the stands up. And then your Wandy from the game.
My Wandy goes to Vernon Macklin. I said it earlier in the show, I appreciate Vernon Macklin as a scorer, as a presence inside that way.
He does
not grab rebounds.
No.
He was getting completely manhandled all game. There were plenty of times where you could see him getting pushed around, and Azealia is one of the best in the conference at getting position inside, sealing off, finding a way to get a look at the basket. Mm. And Macklin just had nothing to answer that. They had to go to Patrick Young a lot of the time. So for that, I give it to Vernon Macklin.
Right. I'm going to give my Wandy to somebody from post-game media. I don't know them. They're certainly not listening. But apparently Kevin Stallings, coach of Vanderbilt, they've lost their last regular season game like 12 times out of the last 13 years or something like that, I believe, as the question was phrased. And the reporter asked if he knew why that was. And, you know, like, if that's what the guy's story is, he has to ask that question just because, you know, you have to bring it up and you have to give him a chance to comment on the fact that he apparently just can't win the last game of the regular season. But the fact that, like, he had to know that a very disgruntled Kevin Stallings, who was angry about that game because he thought the turning point of the game was a bad call that went against Vanderbilt, he was going to come in pissed off, and he certainly was.
Right.
So when the question comes to him, like, how come you suck in the last game of the regular season every year, you knew he was just going to be mad, and he responded appropriately, angrily, and dismissive, and that's what happened.
Right.
So I'm going to get to the question more than anything.
Listen, intro to sports journalism part two.
Yeah.
If you cannot imagine a good answer to the question you're asking, you probably shouldn't ask it.
Right.
And my favorite part of that guy's thing was that his follow-up was, well, is it frustrating?
Yeah.
Like, after you get told off, you should probably just give up.
Right. Well, I mean, that was a pretty good indication that, yeah, actually, it is kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I think the answer was pretty much evident before you even asked the follow-up. So just quiet down a little bit, guy.
All right, and then as far as the trip goes, I'm going to flip it up. We're going to end on a good note for this one. We're going to start with the Wandies of the trip. And I guess I'll start, because your Wandy is much more epic than mine, and we might not have time for it. I'm going to give it to the Nashville weather. It was miserable. As soon as we hit the state of Tennessee line, it was just pouring rain. It was randomly really cold in Nashville to the point that I wasn't prepared for it. And, you know, I have very fond memories, very, very warm feelings about the city of Nashville. So when something as simple as Mother Nature, you know, craps on my experience in Nashville, I got to give it the Wandy.
Right. It was really windy. That made our lives difficult trying to film from the perspective of it being cold.
Yeah.
There was just nothing good about how the weather helped us. It was a problem all week.
Agree. Are you a Wandy?
All right. We're passing a few of my Wandys right now. This is a highway thing. We're driving down I-75. There are too many orange cones on the road. I don't know when this project started or who proposed that it was okay to need 100,000 cones and take 10 years to do it. But we've done a lot of these road trips, and I drive a lot of these same highways for the last 2 years going back and forth from Connecticut. There are too many cones. Nothing's getting done. This is useless. Just somebody do something. There's a guy who was like, here's my plan to fix the highways. We're going to need 476,000 cones. and it's going to take 15 years to accomplish what we're trying to do. And somebody was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it. Set it up. And where do you get all these cones? Do you go to Home Depot? Like, hey, I need 400,000 cones. Like, right. Where do you get all the cones?
There's a factory somewhere just churning out these cones.
And they're like, I could see if they actually did need the cones.
Right.
There are cones literally sitting, touching a concrete wall.
Right.
You don't need to tell me I'm not supposed to drive into the concrete wall.
Right.
I can figure that one out on my own. Just somebody pick up all the cones.
Right. I've never seen you angry, so angry about anything, and you could go on for hours as you have on this trip about the cones, but we've got a couple minutes left on the battery, so let's move on to the majors. I'm going to give mine to Mr. Luca here. I've thoroughly enjoyed this trip, and you can follow on my Twitter at twitter.com/AdamDBerry, chronicling the ridiculous quotes Greg has dropped throughout this journey. My favorite one, personally, I'll give my favorite two. We were talking about a show that my girlfriend watches called Police Women of Cincinnati, and it's on TLC, and you were just mind blown by the title.
How could that be a show?
Right.
Like, seriously?
And then you said there could not be a more random title. Like, the only thing more random would be Veterinarians of Milwaukee.
Which would be sufficiently random.
Certainly. And that floored me for about a solid hour of the trip. And then the other one is we were getting gas in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where I went to high school, at a gas station I was familiar with. And we're running a little late because traffic in North Georgia was killing us. And we're trying to pull out, and this guy just meanders in front of the car. He looked a little bit like Muhammad Ali. And Greg's response was, Muhammad Ali here trying to slow us down on the road.
We were dangerously close to being late to the game. We wound up getting there a half hour early. At the time, we thought it could be close, and this guy was really pissing me off.
All right, Greg, your major?
My major, really simple. A lot like Adam gave it to me, I'm going to give mine to Adam. It makes the trips exponentially more fun when there's a second person there to kind of share it with. It's easier to go out and do things and be a part of the city and get a feel for it when you have another person there, so I appreciate Adam letting us take his car for a change, kind of have a little more fun with it, do some things that I probably normally wouldn't have done if I was there by myself. So it was a good weekend, and I have Adam to thank for that.
And it has certainly been a pleasure. And that's going to wrap it up for this show. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Look us up on Facebook, on Twitter, twitter.com/alligatorsports, and @AdamDBerry.
And I apologize for the break in the audio, but despite my frenetic pace to get that show over and done with in the car, the laptop battery had other ideas, so we're back here in the Alligator office, made it back safe and sound to upload this podcast. We are on spring break this week. Greg will be getting you coverage on alligatorsports.org from Atlanta in the SEC tournament. We're going to have a video show going up here in a couple of hours. Stay tuned. We'll be back with another podcast probably next Monday. We appreciate all the email we have gotten from Shira and Ron. We will get to your topics next week. Thanks for listening.